Here comes Payet.
Premier League show on URN Sport.
He has gone off for Southampton and Shane Long has replaced him. They just showed his goals again, and I think it's really shown what Southampton have for the rest of the season. He headed the ball for the first goal and slotted it past Mignone home from the second, and he's definitely one to watch.
Yeah, looks like a bit of a complete striker so far for just 17 million for Southampton, so they will be hoping he scores a lot more goals. But back to Liverpool.
I was just
going to
say, their recruitment policy is fantastic, isn't it? You know, they just seem to always find the bargain players and everyone else is looking for them. But also Marouane Fellaini has come on. It was Juan Mata who's come off again. They've just shown Mata's goal again. He went off to a standing ovation. He's had a very good game, so... And I think a more of a defensive move here by Jose Mourinho.
Everton versus Middlesbrough. Ademola Lookman comes on and he's one-on-one with the keeper, close range. It's a tight angle, but it's a good stop. Aaron Lennon coming on for Lookman now. That's a
strange
sight I'd hope I'd never see again. But carry on.
We've also got a substitution. Gabby Adini has gone off for Southampton and Shane Long has replaced him. They just showed his goals again, and I think it's really shown what Southampton have for the rest of the season. He headed the ball for the first goal and slotted it past Mignone home from the second, and he's definitely one to watch.
Yeah, looks like a bit of a complete striker so far for just 17 million for Southampton. So
honeymoon period, we're past all the excitement and you can do no wrong. Now it's okay, now you actually need to start doing your job and performing, because the stat that I've seen, which is some people are taking it the wrong way, is the fact that he's got the exact same wins, draws and losses as Brendan Rodgers had in his opening term, although weirdly we've conceded more goals and we've actually scored fewer goals. Now whilst everyone's saying, oh, there you are, Liverpool have just bought another Brendan Rodgers, some of those did include that incredible title run, the start, the opening games, that brilliant title surgery meant, so they are slightly distorted in there. Also in terms of the goals thing, well, yeah, we had, in my opinion, the world's best striker at that point,
Luis Suarez,
Barcelona.
Yes.
It's bad though. I mean, I thought the Liverpool, we had really good strength and depth, had a good amount of qualities stacked throughout the rest of the squad. They've been given their opportunity to play and they just haven't turned up. Mane, you know, Liverpool, the Liverpool fans, we were all been saying, oh yeah, when Africa Con finishes and when Mane is back, we'll be fine, I'll be right back to where we were. No, wasn't. You know, the whole game was dreadful. And Klopp seems to be a bit stuck now, because it's sort of, well, my plan A is usually we just press and press and press. And it seems the team has got knackered at this point, and it's got knackered far too early on the season. Klopp doesn't seem to think that, oh, well, what's plan B? And searching through his book to try and find something. I mean, it's worrying, and the fact that there has already been, and I'm dead against this, but there's already people saying, oh, Klopp out. You know,
that's too early.
That's stupid, in my opinion. It's completely stupid. It took him 3 years at Dortmund to win the title. I'm not saying we're going to win it next year, hopefully, touch wood.
Is this year your year?
Just because I said that at the start of the year, that's the old cliche saying, I know, but I think this year for Klopp now, it's damage limitation. It's top. I think if we can try and get a top four place, maybe I think third or fourth. Third would be a brilliant step given this collapse mid-season. I think if we could get fourth, I'd actually be happy. So, sorry, we might have to take that mantle from you.
Chance over at Crystal Palace, Stoke, was there?
I mean, Crystal Palace actually have had a great few chances recently. They just can't get it on target. They've had a few corners whipped in a few minutes ago. Both very close, but he's made a cracking substitution, I think, in that a few minutes ago he took off Wilfried Zaha, who's just been frustrated and continually struggled for Jeffrey Schlupp. And he's also brought on Johan Kabay for Jason Puncheon. So he's definitely going for the win this game. He's not willing to take this loss. Palace are going to do everything they can to make sure they can at least take a point away from this game, because in the situation they're in, they cannot afford another loss against a team like Stoke, who have only won 2 of their last 10 games.
Stadium of Light. David Moyes just sitting in his seat, not happy at all, and it's just too easy for Southampton. 4-0 win is something they really needed after having only won one of their last 7 games under Claude Puel.
Well, that's a slight reverse for Sunderland after their 4-0 away week, away win last week. A 4-0 defeat at home is very disappointing for David Moyes' side, and you've really got to improve your consistency when you're down there. You think that a win, a 4-0 away at Crystal Palace, would have some sort of confidence boost for Sunderland, but
Crystal Palace, though, they were dismal last week. I think most Sunday league teams probably would have beaten them 4-0, and this week is really no different. They're in for a real relegation battle if they can't pull their socks up this season. It's been poor the whole game, really, over here. So God knows how Crystal Palace are going to stay up, but I'm calling that they're going to really struggle this season.
How much do you think the loss of Yannick Bolasie in the summer is having an impact on Crystal Palace's poor season so far?
I think it's definitely had an effect. I think Wilfried Zaha hasn't really been able to cope on his own without Bolasie. I saw earlier the first half, he had a few moments where he got the ball and the Stoke defenders knew exactly what they were doing. They brought him down, they got him frustrated, he got himself booked and had to be brought off because he's a liability on the pitch without Bolasie. So I think it's massively impacted their morale as a team in general.
I think, personally, I would say that the signing of Christian Benteke, although he's an established Premier League striker and he's obviously a very good player playing for the Belgian national team, but I think when I think about Crystal Palace's seasons in the Premier League, I used to think of them as a really good counter-attacking team. When you see Crystal Palace playing away from home in the last few seasons, they'd always look dangerous with the pace of Zaha and Bolasie and occasionally Dwight Gayle as well up front, but now with the sign of Benteke, they seem to have gone more route one, and they're really struggling with that. Is it full time now?
It's full time. Players going off, and well, both teams should be pretty disappointed with what's just been displayed. A scrappy game of football, very few chances, and well, I have almost nothing of note to say about this game.
The whistle's just been blown at the Stadium of Light, but a few seconds before the whistle was blown, there was a free kick to Sunderland, and Kasri tried to do an Alexis Sanchez, but it was a bit more obvious, and he completely handballed it. The ball went into the back of the net, but this time it was seen by the referee, and no goal was given. So, full-time, Southampton 4, Sunderland 0.
It sort of sums up Sunderland's season, perhaps, that trying to score a handball consolation goal, 4-0, 4-0 down at home. Thought maybe, you know, why not? Let's have a goal back.
It's
but
all about the goal difference.
Yeah, it is all about
it.
Well,
it may well end up being about the goal difference.
If they go,
they've lost all that they gained last week, didn't they?
If they go down now by one goal, I'm sure he might regret trying to score that one with his with his hand. And I think, is that full time at Manchester United
it
now?
It's just gone full time. Yeah, Manchester United pretty much dominant. Watford did actually, to be fair to them, go all out of attack. They were throwing everything forward. They had a free kick from about the halfway line, which Gomez, the keeper, actually decided to take, and the entire team seemed to go into the box. Mourinho seemed to actually be slightly quiet whilst that was going on, not usually shouting at the ref that it was full time or blaming them for something. But United coped with it perfectly fine, clears it away, and all 3 points do go to the red side of Manchester.
So Southampton claimed a 4-0 win at Sunderland today. Naomi, can I have a summary of the game from you?
I've just seen a repeat of Gabbiadini's first goal, and it could also be considered as a handball. It's very tight on the ref's call, but it was given. And then Gabbiadini did a great turn and got the second goal, and he's just showing he's worth the money. And he's scored in the previous game as well, and he's definitely a player to watch. And also Shane Long scoring 2 late goals, making it clear that Southampton have still got good strikers and they won the game easily, and Sunderland are in real trouble.
Do you think that the signing of Gabbiadini, along with the Southampton's exit from the Europa League, could potentially propel them up the table? They're currently in 11th place, which is quite surprising when you consider the recent seasons they've had. But now with a new in-form striker and not having to worry about any cup competitions apart from the League Cup, which we're obviously in the final of, do you think that Southampton could maybe challenge for a European place once again?
I don't see why not. Based on their performance today, they definitely had lots of chances. They defended well, and they looked like quite a good side. So I think they could. I think they could challenge. Yeah.
I think also with that League Cup final that they've now got, they have. I mean, it's weird how the whole system works. But they could have potentially got themselves European football for next season, because obviously the winner of the League Cup goes into the Europa League. But if they then, you know, like for example, because they're playing Man United, if Man United finish in the top five, then it'll then drop to the runner-up. So, in a way, Southampton could, I mean, even if they don't quite reach the Europa League in league placings, they might actually be a slight dependent on how United do, then see where they finish. But of course, if you go in through a cup competition to the Europa League, you have to play some absolutely some stupid qualifying game.
Yeah, your season starts in July. Yeah, in Andorra.
Yeah, in Andorra. And if you're West Ham, you struggle with that hideously. Or, you know, I think, for example, this season Southampton had to do a qualifying one, and they started off in Iceland for their first game in the season. Yeah. So the Europa League is a blessing and a curse, I think. It's good for commercial reasons, but it's also a real drain on the team.
Do they have a squad, do we think, that's big enough to compete on that front as well as in the domestic game?
I think the depth of the squad is a massive issue for most teams, unless you're a really, really top side with a very large budget and a very large squad like Chelsea. Teams don't have this sort of squad depth, and I think that comes down to a lot of what's happened to Leicester this season, in that Europe massively affected them, as well as some specific transfers like Kante going to Chelsea. Most teams don't have the squad depth to go to Europe, go to these places like Iceland, especially in the Europa League, where teams you've never really heard of, and then go back and 3 days later playing in the Premier League. It's very demanding. Most teams just can't hack it.
I think what Southampton do so well is that although maybe they don't have the squad depth of some other teams, they can always rely on bringing in, you know, certain youth players every now and then. We've seen Josh Sims, I think, start a few games this season. Obviously, we've seen James Ward-Prowse has become a mainstay of the team after, you know, coming through the youth ranks there. And with the shrewd spending that they do and the bringing up the youth players, I think Southampton are a prime example of how to run a football club in the Premier League. They do extremely well considering the amount of money that they spend and considering how every season Liverpool seem to take their best players, but they do very well, I think.
It's fine. Gabbiadini's coming to Anfield next season. That's already sorted, clearly.
And once you get him, you get a free Fraser Forster.
This is URN Sport.
Today we saw Manchester United stretch their unbeaten run to 16 games. Jeremy, can you give us a breakdown of the game today?
Well, it was a pretty dominant Man United display, to be honest. They really came out and looked like an old Jose Mourinho team, strong going forward and very strong at the back. Watford, to their credit, despite what the scoreline says, you know, Watford actually pushed United all the way. They were really going for it throughout the whole game. I had expected that it was going to be a bit of a back-to-the-wall performance, obviously, for Watford. Going to Old Trafford, they were going to park up and just sort of hope they could see it out, which obviously they didn't. But a few players from Watford who really caught my eye were their three forwards they were playing. They had Troy Deeney, who had a few blazing shots sail wide. Marco Zarratti, who, if you remember, was a failed project at West Ham, he was playing a lot more deeper and did a lot of the creative work. And Aubameyang, again, for his second game in the row, I thought was very, very good for Watford. And, of course, Etienne Capoue in the midfield doing what he does best. Man United, though, looked a lot more annoyingly, as a Liverpool fan, I'm saying this, as like an old United team. They had the lead man up front that they could depend on in Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Anthony Martial blazing down that left wing, bringing back the creative spark, which I think United have missed. Mata playing in behind Zlatan and obviously on the right Mkhitaryan, providing that creative spark for the team. The centre midfield was the only bit I was really questioning. They had Pogba playing next to Ander Herrera, which has worked for them, but I do think that whilst Pogba's very good going forward, they're two players that are going forward, and it's the old United chant of attack, attack, attack. They were clearly doing it, but when they got turned over in the middle of the park, they didn't seem to instantly react and decide they had to defend, and there was quite a bit of pressure put on David De Gea, who put in a fantastic display. But I think Jose Mourinho, I mean, we can never tell you if he's happy. He always looks like he's just grumpy all the time now, which is annoying and a bit of a shame because we used to love him for his media outbursts. But I think he will secretly be happy with that. It was a successful job done at home, got the 3 points. Finally, after a huge unbeaten run, they have clawed their way out of six at the cost of my beloved Liverpool, which, well, for the moment, that is. But it was good for United. I think it's promising for them. They'll be happy to see, and it's a result that they would have said at the start of the game they expected to win. So I think Mourinho will just sort of tick that off as a job done and well played.
Do you think now that, say, if Chelsea were to slip up, which is looking unlikely, do you think that Man United could maybe be the one of the teams that to challenge up there for the title?
Well, a rival punditry programme called Match of the Day, when I was watching that the other day, they said that, interestingly, when they were discussing teams that could rival Chelsea, they did say that they thought Man United was the best team in terms of it was the best equipped with the best squad. Tottenham was the only other team they put into that bracket of the two teams they thought had the strongest squad or the strongest team that could beat them. I think for United it's too late. Mourinho has openly said, you know, the title race is over for him. I think top four is obviously what he's aiming for. I think United are probably looking at third place, probably, I would say, is what they think realistically they can get. I think Arsenal and Tottenham are ahead of them. I think City are the unknown factor in there, because we don't know obviously what players like Jesus are going to be able to do, and their defence is, well, leaking like a... Well, I can't think of a very good metaphor at the moment, damn. But their defence is terrible at the moment. And I think Liverpool are going to need something big to pull it back and throw themselves back into that top four race, realistically. But I think I don't think they can challenge Chelsea now. I think Chelsea are just too far ahead, and they've put too much clear water between them.
Yeah, well, they're only 2 points off second place, Tottenham now. Over to you, Dom. You were watching Middlesbrough versus Everton.
Indeed I was. Game of few chances, I think three of note. One for Ademola Lookman, denied by Middlesbrough keeper. One for Lukaku, which was he probably should have put away, considering how clinical he normally is, where he gets, I think it was four shots on target against Bournemouth last week,
yeah,
and scored all four.
Yeah.
That was disappointing to see him scuff that, but at the same time, credit to the keeper for making the save. And then Gibson's header from the corner near the end, about 8-7 minutes in, brilliantly saved by Robles. I want to give Robles a mention, but he's really come of age since he's started playing this season. He was never really one of those players who you think would amount to too much in the Premier League. Didn't seem to have the quality, but he's ousted Stekelenburg, and I hope to see him go strong.
Yeah, he's certainly stepped up in the place of Tim Howard, who obviously left to go to the MLS quite recently. Do you think that now, under Koeman, Everton have been quite impressive recently? Do you think top four for them is too far away at the moment?
Oh, it's way too far away.
Yeah.
The bad run of results between October and early December, where I think it was one win in 10, it's done far too much damage for us to credibly challenge the European places. It's, how many points? It's 5 points behind Liverpool, but they play Tottenham
today. Yeah.
Today. I mean, the teams at the top are going to win a lot of games, so it would be very difficult for Everton to catch.
Well, as an Everton fan, would you prefer to see your side finish in Europa League places, or would you rather avoid the Europa League after the discussion that can sometimes just be a hindrance to a team?
Well, 3 seasons ago, when we were challenging for fourth spot, I would have said no, I'd prefer not to be in the Europa League. But now, it's such a draw for other players coming into your club, and it might well mean the difference between Romelu Lukaku staying and Romelu Lukaku going.
Yeah, that's good. The former Everton and Man United manager. Alex, you were watching Stoke claim a 1-0 win over Crystal Palace.
Yeah, Jimmy, I mean, it was really poor from both teams, really, especially Palace, but Big Sam looking like he's in for a real challenge at Palace, and probably his first ever relegation from a top-tier English side. Listen, Stoke had one very good chance, which they put away. Joe Allen performing a great turn and finishing it, but arguably it should really go down to Arnautovic for a great ball in. First half, there was a great chance for Stoke as well, which was cleared off the line by Townsend. But other than that, those were the only two big chances of the game. Stoke dominated possession-wise, but they suffered the same fate as last week, in that they just couldn't seem to string the right passes together to get the ball in the back of the net. That's their big issue, and I think Mark Hughes is really going to have to try and resolve that somehow. Probably through more crosses to Peter Crouch. I mean, he's a big guy, and they don't utilise his height, and it's really frustrating to watch him stand there, because he's not fast enough to get the long balls they try and put over the top. But he would be great in every crossing situation. He looks dangerous. One player I would mention for Palace, though, Andros Townsend. He's the only player I would genuinely say today on the pitch at all who had a cracking game. Despite his team playing very poorly, he never stopped running. He was always in the right places. The few somewhat dangerous chances Palace had were caused by him. And, of course, he cleared a ball off the line in the first half, which was the only big chance of that half. But it's really poor from Palace. I don't know just why they're playing like this. They don't have a bad side. It's just they can't seem to work together this season.
Well, Palace just, like Sunderland, only managed one shot on target in the game. And you suggest now that is the main problem for those teams down there. It's not so much that they're getting, you know, hammered every single week. It's just the fact that they're not creating enough chances. And the chances that they do create, they don't score, really, though. Sunderland and Palace do have two good strikers in Defoe and Benteke, but you can't expect them to put away every single chance that they get. And if you have one shot on target in a game, then you're looking like, you know, it's going to be a real struggle to win that game.
Of course, and Crystal Palace, you can see that from their goal difference. Yes, they're 19th, but their goal difference is minus 14, whereas you can take Sunderland as a minus 22, and Hull, who's actually ahead of them, on minus 27 goals.
Yeah.
Their problem is goal scoring. If they can sort out that, I think they'd be a lot better, and I think that's what Big Sam is going to work on this season.
Well, they did bring in Mamadou Sakho from Liverpool on transfer deadline day, so you'd think that along with the defensive options that they've already got, that Palace's problem is perhaps not in conceding goals, but obviously scoring them, as they failed to do once again today.
Wow, and it's a fantastic performance from Liverpool. Two goals in really quick succession, both from Sadio Mane. Absolutely fantastic. The first coming from Wijnaldum a few minutes ago, a superb ball from him right through the middle, and a goal coming literally 30 seconds ago, a second from Mane. Very, very impressive. Massive mistake for Alderweireld in the Tottenham defence, actually. It's really, really poor. Mane makes the move. It goes to Firmino. He has a go. And then it goes back out. And then Mane manages to scramble it in. Superb from Liverpool, but it's been coming, as I've said.
Oh,
this could quickly turn into a very, very bad match for Liverpool, for Tottenham, and a very, very good match for Liverpool.
It was a poor mistake, that was.
Very poor mistake. But fantastic composure and finish from Sadio Mane for the second goal. I mean, absolutely superb.
Yeah, it kind of shows just how much Liverpool have missed him in these this past month or so. You know, scoring two goals straight away now, and that's putting Liverpool in, you could say, control against Tottenham, which is very surprising when you consider the two teams' differing form at the moment. But Sadio Mane, yeah, with two excellent finishes there past Hugo Lloris.
I mean, Tottenham now, the key will be trying to keep composure. Don't get frustrated. Don't just start kicking the ball up the field. And just see if you can salvage something from this match. You've still got time. It's